This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer. Fantastic to have you with us for the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Some amazing experts and inspirational chat on today's show. Asking for small business owners the way you can make your money go further and your time as well. Alexandra Meyer of House of Social joined us for a small business marketing clinic. I was turning up the heat with Camp's Kitchen Hot Sauce, a business born out of the pandemic. How much spice could I take? Circa Coyle is a career and money coach for expats. What are some of her top tips? And what exactly does a money coach do? She was explaining. And two entrepreneurs have created a platform called Supper Club, where you can live with luxury for less. And as ever, Ludmilla joining us for that free legal clinic. Ludmilla Yamalova looking behind the headlines, breaking it down on those new directives regarding cohabitation and registration here in the UAE. And we were asking, is it legal to film a nanny without her permission?
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We love introducing you to experts, allowing you to pick their brains live on the show. And today, joining us live in the studio is Alexandra Meyer of House of Social. We're having a small business marketing clinic. Now, she has got more than 13 years of social media and digital marketing experience, and she's so passionate about helping small businesses connect with their customers and the community through consulting and a huge range of free courses. Alex, this is my first question to you before we get the text line, because I've already had a number of messages wanting your insights here. Why do you offer so much content for free?
It's pretty much how I can then have business in return, right? So if I am able to offer so much value up front, so we kind of call it like the honeypot strategy, right? You have this huge amount of value that you just create up front. Two things are going to happen. One, you're going to create a lot of legacy and credibility and accessibility, mm-hmm. right? What happens a lot with coaches, consultants is they don't offer value up front. They're already looking at you saying, book me, pay me. But I don't know you. You're just a stranger, right? How am I supposed to trust you that you're going to fix my problems and give me the results? So you put up a lot of value up front, as much as you can. In my case, it happens that it is a whole free online academy with 30 plus courses, right? So you offer a lot of that up front. So that happens, that one side happens, trust, credibility, accessibility. I mean, it's the best business card you can offer someone, right? The second thing is from that huge pool of people, which is kind of like your top of your sales funnel, a small or a medium or a large, but a percentage of people will start taking your content that is free. And when that time comes that they even have money or they're ready for it, you'll be at the top of mind. It will be you that they'll be calling.
So when they're ready to scale up or they want more, I guess, so, you know, specific advice relating to their situation, that you they already have that trust. They've already got results based on your kind of philosophy and education. Okay, makes sense. Now, we've seen a huge explosion in the number of small business licenses. In fact, I went to renew my trade license last week and I said to the guy, shout out to Tariq, lovely guy. He said he reads 52 books a year. And I was like,
wow,
I know. He was a great guy. And I said, what's kind of exploding right now?
Yes.
You know, always in journalist mode. What, you know, what trends are you noticing with new business licenses? He was like, e-commerce. Which kind of leads me to ask you, what kind of challenges are you hearing on the marketing front from small businesses right now? What are some of the most common pain points?
Getting people to go to the site. Because, okay, everybody can build a great website now, e-commerce, you have Shopify, you have Wix, all great platforms. But how do you get people to actually consider your product, explore your product, and then not just leave an abandoned cart and then purchase and create loyalty? Mm. How can we get those repeat customers? So the first step, the easy step is, yes, let's get that e-commerce website done really well, but then let's have a look at something. There's a free course on my academy, which is our website CRMs. So those email flows, those automated CRMs, that needs to be put in place.
And this is what I get. I get the message from the online shop going, Helen, you forgot something, or Helen, we miss you.
We miss you.
Helen, here's a 10% code to complete that purchase.
So those are your CRMs. Man. Yeah, that means they're doing a good job if you're getting that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they are, because I'm spending all my money on clothes that I don't need. And now we've seen also a huge explosion in the number of platforms that traditionally we might think of being purely entertainment, but actually are converted for business owners, whether that's through education. So thinking of TikTok in particular there, or Instagram shopping. I mean, I end up completing quite a lot of purchases purely through Instagram without even going to a website. So if you're advising a company, we're looking at LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, YouTube, and more. How do you start to narrow down which platforms you should be focusing on? Because a lot of companies, a lot of SMEs or sole traders are doing everything themselves. They're doing the PR, they're doing the HR, that, you know, and social media interactions as well. How do you then start to pick and choose where you should be spending your time and money?
Yes,
of course.
I get it. It's overwhelming. There is one thing I always say to everybody. We have to put our marketeer hats on. And as a marketeer hat, we have to look at the current landscape, at the pulse, and we have to go, as I say, where it's popping. Mm-hmm. So where is it popping? TikTok is huge. That interest-based algorithm is so powerful. So if that's having a moment and it's really good, the algorithm, there's your answer. You have got to go where it's popping. Mm-hmm. Second, we've got LinkedIn. LinkedIn algorithm is also amazingly well. LinkedIn ads, extremely powerful. You want to target certain people that do certain jobs that maybe are certain business owners or certain companies. LinkedIn ads are amazing. LinkedIn organic reach is amazing. Of course, we cannot just get rid of Instagram. It is having, as I call it, an existential crisis right now. It is.
When the Kardashians start calling you out, you know it's a crisis.
You've got a problem, right? Yeah. But you can't just forget about it. You still need to put in place some tactics that move the needle a little bit, but it's a little bit of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Speaking of a busy hour, we're having a live clinic right now, small business marketing, with a bit of an emphasis on social media today, with Alexandra Meyer of House of Social. She has got well over a decade of social media and digital marketing experience and really specialises in helping small businesses connect with customers in the community, but also consults with a lot of bigger companies too. And she's helping you this afternoon. So let's go to the text line. And as I said, you don't need to put your name on if you'd rather not. But Terence has, hi Terence, saying, how effective are Google AdWords and any advice for getting the most out of it?
Google Ads should definitely be a big part of your strategy. They can take time though. So if you are looking for more of a quicker turnaround, you could be looking at maybe doing Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads, TikTok ads, massively powerful. If you want to target Saudi, doing Snapchat ads are very underpriced. So anybody listening,
really?
We know Saudi's kind of like booming quite a bit. If you want to target potential customers in Saudi, run those Snapchat ads, even with just 500 dirhams. They're so underpriced.
And this is almost like kind of pop-ups that will be coming through on someone's feed. Because I've seen a lot of ads like Snapchat filter ads at the minute. There's a lot of people clearly spending a lot of money on those. Interesting.
Yeah, because they're very underpriced at the moment. So get on it. Yeah.
Okay, good. I like it. Saving some money this afternoon. Elle has been in touch saying, hi both. I have a new online site selling scented candles, soy wax. I need help with finding customers and what to actually feature on the website apart from the shop function. Are testimonials actually useful for buyers? Also, with Christmas coming up, should I be paying to have a stall at markets or just focusing online?
Ooh, so many good questions. How to find our customers? Well, you want to start building a social media community. So your followers, and maybe you're listening to me and you're like, oh, but Alex, I only have like 1,000. But that's amazing. Those are potential 1,000 people that you can get to your site. So I want you to be DMing all of your Instagram followers or even all of your TikTok followers. I want you to look at all of your community. Yes, pick up the phone. All of your friends. What's up, everybody? When we start a business, it all starts with our closer community. Because if we can't sell to our friends and our closest ones, then it's going to be really hard. So start with proximity. Your social media followers, people that you have in your community, message them all and make sure that you have a first-timer offer. When people are landing on your site, I see that I have a first-timer offer. You are capturing my email, my WhatsApp, in return, you building data. So that is a must for anybody that has an e-commerce and is just starting out. Customer reviews, 100%. If you go to my website, you will see a pop-up that actually pops up in the bottom that says, Helen has just joined Alex's Free Rebel Academy. You can even put a little pop-up like that that says that Helen has just purchased the soy wax teal scented. Those things are so cute because it makes you show that your site is alive. Mm-hmm. Even plug in the reviews on there. Yes.
In terms of the kind of meeting people piece, I think that can be really powerful for small businesses. We're in an hour's time, we're going to be meeting a new hot sauce company that I literally walked past in Mercato and they were so lovely and engaging. And I was like, hi, guys, let's talk food.
Yes.
Do you want to come on the show? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, they were there, obviously, tasting and meeting customers. I think for sometimes, especially for a new company, you talked earlier about building that trust.
Yes.
To actually see a tangible product, to meet the person that might be making it. And I think that can be really valuable. I've no idea about return on investment at particular markets or stalls. But
you can scale it down by looking at what products you have and think about how can I create a mini kit. So Rihanna does that really well with her Fenty skincare. She always does these, what she calls travel size. But what they really are is they are easing you in.
Test the water.
Oh, let me buy a smaller size. So you can think about how can I do like a little taster pack? And how can I even send that as a little freebie? That could be even sometimes more cost effective than the stall that you might pay at the market. Mm-hmm. It's all about looking at the budgets and making those maths of, I need to ease people in. I need to give people a taster of my product so they can feel it, they can smell it. You can even do small gatherings yourself. You know, if you find a really nice place and you invite people, so it is all about you and you're not competing with other.
A little immersive experience.
Yes.
All the very best with the business, Elle. Sounds really exciting. Sounds great. Message here saying, thanks for the great programs. One of the best radio stations and my favourite. Thank you. I just want to add one point regarding the marketing discussion. In regards to which platform to target, I think brand and product position strategy and who is your target audience dictate which digital platform you should focus on. Absolutely. Where are your customers hanging out?
Yes, that, going back to what I said, you have to go where it's really popping. So if TikTok is really popping, you will find your consumers there, your customers there. You may even find new ones. A lot of times people already cut themselves short by saying, no, but my people are not there. And I always challenge them, how do you really know? Mm-hmm. Have you gone and tried for at least 3 solid months? I went on TikTok very intensively and I went from 1,000 to 20,000 in 2 months. Oof. And when I did my free event, a third of the people at my event were my TikTok followers. And I actually didn't think. But you have to try, because if it's popping, it's popping for a reason.
Okay, hope that helps. No name on this message. How far in advance of launching should you start marketing online? Great question. We're opening a cafe in January, February. Should I start an Instagram page and landing page to the website even though there's no content yet?
Yes, yes, yes. You want to start now. Okay, this is the best thing anybody can get from today's session. Get people emotionally connected with you. That is your number one strategy. How do you build emotional connection? You go behind the scenes. You document. It's not just by coincidence we all love reality TV. Why do we love reality TV? Because we are so emotionally invested in these people and what they're doing. So tell us about all of the journey of your cafe. Show us the space now. Show us the furniture you're choosing. Tell us about your dilemma that you're dealing with. Show us the menu you're picking. Take us through. I said to a client of mine last week, I said, think of your life like a Netflix show. It's a documentary Netflix show. Share everything and anything. Get people emotionally invested with you, and then they'll be with you for the long haul.
And that's what kept a lot of small businesses afloat during the pandemic. It was that emotional connection.
Yes.
It was people feeling included in their journey, their struggles. And then, you know, when they came out the other side, they were still top of mind.
100%.
Ready to go through the doors. Okay, we've got time for one last question. This is from Vivek saying, curious what Alex thinks of affiliate marketing programs, e.g. key customers and influencers getting unique URLs and promo codes in exchange for commission. Huge in the States, growing in the UK, but not so much here. We're looking into it for a fashion brand.
Yes, 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 yes. Although, however, the market here has been, how can I say it, a little bit kind of spoiled, because things have just been done in a more sort of, let's call it, casual way, mm-hmm. right? Americans are amazing at setting up systems, and in that way, they are so much more mature. I think it's great for you to start, but also play it by ear. If you meet an amazing creator influencer tomorrow that doesn't want the code, that doesn't want the affiliate link, okay, well then have a more human conversation and see how it plays out.
I like it. Yeah. Okay, I haven't run out of questions, but we have run out of time. For anyone that does want to take advantage, as you said, you've got 30 free courses across all sorts of different topics around social media and marketing.
And a mentorship club is launching soon. I'm so excited.
I've had a number of messages going, how can we find out more? You're Alex House of Social on Instagram, but I'll let you do all the other websites and
thank
tags.
You.
Go for it.
Well, if we didn't answer your question, DM it to me on my Instagram. It's Alex House of Social. My academy is www.alexhouseofsocial.com. Everything is Alex Alice's Social. So just, you'll find me.
You're a star. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. Really great to have a no-nonsense discussion with lots of humour in there as well. And I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about in the future. We've just been talking off-air about trolls, something that I think needs to be discussed online. Alex there from House of Social.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Everyone loves hot sauce, they just don't know it yet. We're going to be finding out this afternoon. We're live on Facebook, something I'm definitely going to live to regret, as no doubt the sweat pours down my forehead and my mouth goes on fire. Joining us in the kitchen today is Camp's Kitchen. We've got Michael, otherwise known as the Chief Flavour Officer, and Victoria, the Chief Cheerleader. Great to have you with us. And I have to say, massive shout out, Victoria. Those T-shirts, the radio-themed hot sauce, is fantastic. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having us on.
Absolute pleasure. Now, I need to start with the beginning. Michael, have you always worked in food?
No, actually, this is the the biggest challenge I've had so far. Is this is my first time ever working in food and beverage. Prior to this, I was always in sales, and previous to that, outdoor education. So this is a totally new experience for me.
This was born out of the pandemic. Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances that led to Camp's Kitchen starting?
Yeah, I think it's probably a story a lot of people can relate to at this point. The pandemic and the lockdowns, they made everybody reevaluate their lives. And for us, it was being locked down, having the hobbies, and searching for a way to fill that time. And having always been a hot sauce enthusiast and having always been a cooking enthusiast, I decided that's how I would start spending my time, is working on fermentation and working on making sauces of my own.
Let's talk about tasting and testing. Victoria, what's your natural kind of spice tolerance like?
I can go pretty high, but if I can choose, I would always go for the mild sauce. I like quantity over heat.
Okay.
A flavor over heat.
There's a science to this then, Michael, I'm starting to realize. Tell us about the tasting and testing process in your kitchen at home before it's before you started the business officially.
Yeah, so I mean, really, I had no idea what I was doing, so I just started throwing peppers together, and through trial and error, I started figuring out which peppers work well together to achieve the type of spice levels that I was going for. And like Victoria likes a more mild sauce, but I like a spicier sauce.
How much of this, see this, in England, it's like a thing about, you know, who has the hottest curry? Like, who's the biggest man? Testosterone, ego. Is that the case in the world of hot sauces?
Definitely. There's a culture of kind of macho, I can take the hottest sauce there is, give that to me. But I don't really prescribe to that. I mean, I do like a really hot sauce, but for me, if it's not adding flavor, what's the point? You know, you're trying to improve your food with the sauce, not just blow your taste buds out.
So what was the product you started with?
The first sauce that I ever bottled was the Seize the Verde. It wasn't called Seize the Verde then, but that's the green sauce there.
This is one that goes well on tacos, right?
It goes great on tacos or roasted vegetables. We use it every week on like a big platter of roasted broccoli.
Okay. Now, I'm going to regret saying this. I think I want to do some testing. I am the girl that when you go out for dinner and they go, how spicy do you want? I go, white girl spicy. Like, please do not try and blow my head off. So talk to us about how the range has expanded and I guess the kind of the heat level from bottom to top.
So the first sauce, the Smoke and Earth, is the sauce that I made exactly for you.
Thank you.
So everybody who comes to us and says, no, I don't eat spicy, I say, come on, at least try this one sauce. If it's too spicy for you, then of course, stop there.
Now, I've got a glamorous assistant next to me. Poonam is putting a few drops of each sauce on a little plastic spoon for me to test. I'm so nervous about doing this. Okay, so while I test, can you tell us about flavor profile and I guess what's in there, Michael?
Sure. So this, the Smoke and Earth, it is a base of jalapeno, so a mild pepper. It also has dark cherries and chipotle. So you get a little bit of smokiness and a little extra heat from the chipotle.
And a little sour cherry feel.
Yeah, and then also you're getting some lime juice and then kind of classic Mexican spices. You have a little bit of coriander and cumin and you have garlic as well.
I'm not crying.
Yeah.
Does that mean I'm ready for the next level?
Totally. Okay. This is the one I call the flavor sauce. So it's not really a hot sauce yet.
it wasn't not a hot sauce, I would say. No, this was your OG. This is the origin product.
The Cis the Verde, yeah.
And this is more of a green color out of, obviously, as the name suggests. Tell us a little bit about what's in here.
So this is also a jalapeno base, so just slightly spicier than the previous one, but it's going for a very bright, fresh flavor. So you have a lot of fresh coriander, lime juice, lots of garlic, and tomatillo, which is sort of similar to a green tomato. It's very tangy and zingy, so you have that bright flavor.
We're reaching my tolerance. Okay, next one. What's it called and what's in it?
This is the most polarizing sauce that I have. It is a sweet heat, so the sweetness comes from maple syrup. And then the heat, in this case, it comes from a mixture of jalapeno and there's a little bit of Carolina Reaper in there, which is the hottest pepper in the world.
Yes, there is. And what would you do with this one, Michael?
Because of that sweetness, you have a kind of a barbecue sauce vibe. So I would suggest initially using it to just kind of replace your barbecue sauce. Brushing it onto grilled meats and whatnot. But actually, because of that sweetness, it's a unique one. You can put it on some vanilla ice cream.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I should have probably asked at the beginning. Best way to cool down a hot mouth?
Yeah, vanilla ice cream is a good one. Any dairy product. So essentially, the capsaicin oils and peppers, they don't interact with your taste buds. They interact with your pain receptors. And dairy has compounds that intercept the capsaicin oil and the pain receptors.
Did you bring me a pint of vanilla ice cream along with your selection of hot sauces?
I did not. That's self-provided.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We are on. What number are we on? Is this number 4 of 5?
This is the Reaper Racha. So this is my...
The Reaper.
Yeah. This is also a Carolina Reaper.
Victoria's face. She's like,
It is my version of a Sriracha. So it has a little bit of fish sauce. It's the only one that's not vegetarian. That fish sauce is there for an umami boost. So you get that nice flavor balance.
I've had literally the smallest drop on my fingertip. I am going to go all the way, obviously, but we might need to go to a song early. And what would you do with this?
So for me, this is the one I reach for the most often. It's...
It's so hot. So you could do anything. Put some scrambled eggs. You could
totally. I put it on pretty much everything. It's the most kind of versatile of the sauces, I think. And also for me, it's the right heat level.
Yeah. You says you, the seasoned hot sauce maker. Okay, and the last one.
So this one is the most recent release from us. It's called Blue Scorpion.
I'm just gonna have a little sip of water before I sample the Blue Scorpion.
Please, yeah, I'll tell you about it. It's a bit of a unique flavor combination. So we use wild blueberries, which is the smaller ones. They're a little bit more tart, and so that's the flavor you're initially gonna get. And if you smell it, you can really smell the blueberries. But we also use and. You use a base of habanero jalapeno with quite a bit of Trinidad Moruga scorpion, which is the third hottest pepper in the world.
Good grief. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Wow. And I reached my level on the first one. I'm just doing this supporting small businesses on the radio.
So we appreciate it.
Heat fans, where can they meet you? Where can they taste this? Where can they buy them?
Please
talk so I can have some water.
At the moment, we're in the markets. So we're going to be starting up with the Ripe Market in Academy Park when that starts in October. We're also at the Arte Markets. So they take place in Mercado Mall and in Times Square. So actually this weekend we'll be in Mercado Mall on the 1st, on Saturday. And on Sunday we'll be in Times Square.
Amazing. A professional recovery by Helen Farmer after having her taste buds well and truly blown away. Honestly, it's just nice to hear a really positive story coming out of the pandemic. Message going, do you have a website? Camps Kitchen?
Yep, campskitchen.com, Camps Kitchen on Instagram or Facebook. We're lucky. We got the brand across all platforms.
Well, guys, thank you so, so much. Really nice to meet you and taste. And lastly, if someone's just going to buy one out of the range, I guess I understand a bit of your foodie philosophy. What would it be?
Hmm. I think that the crowd pleaser is the first one, the smoke and earth. It's flavorful enough. You know, if you're, what you're going for is just extreme heat, that's not going to do it for you. But it's super flavorful. Everybody can enjoy it, and it works on almost every type of food.
Okay, if you want the details of Cam's Kitchen, by all means, drop me a little line on 40801. I'm going to gleefully hand over to Poonam for some traffic, and I'm going to have a little hot nap under the desk. Victoria and Michael, thank you so, so much.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're talking about expat money today, planning future retirement, being intentional with your savings and spending. Even if you did plan to come here for just a couple of years, next thing you know, it's been a decade. Our guest in the studio now is an expat career and money coach and a professional CV writer as well. So do feel free to get in touch with any questions on saving, CVs, planning. Circa Coyle is with us. How are you today, Circa?
Great. Thank you, Helen. Thanks so much.
I've got so many questions for you. And I guess the first thing is, what's a money coach? Can you explain a little bit about what and why you do?
Absolutely. So really, anything with a coach is usually a coach and mentor. It's someone that can guide you, which is like the mentoring side. They can, you know, suggest what they did. But the coaching really is helping you, asking you the questions and facilitating your own answering of the questions. Mm-hmm. So really like know yourself, which I think is the main.
And then we should be really clear, you're not a financial advisor. You do have people, that trusted people that you work with and you're happy to refer to. But it's not about selling products.
No.
It's about mindset, communication, exactly. Accountability
plan,
as well.
Accountability is a huge part. Absolutely.
I think a lot of people are coming towards the end of No Spend September, and it hasn't gone particularly well. But you obviously are very financially literate. What was that? Was that always the case? What were conversations like about money growing up?
So when I was younger, so obviously I'm Irish, and I have to say, like, my parents were pretty good with money. But what really, really affected me was I left Ireland during the last financial recession. So at that time, you know, people were losing their houses, the banks almost went under. It was really an awful time. You know, people's mental health issues went up, there was stress, people unemployment. And that really affected me. And I always thought I never want to be in that situation where a bank owns anything, my house, or never to be without a house or some kind of security. So then I moved to Qatar. So I was going with that mindset, like, this is an amazing opportunity. I'm tax-free salary. This is, you know, if I do X, Y, Z, I can still have a great life, but also I can actually set up my life, you know?
And I think a lot of expats, you know, move abroad. And let's not dress this up. It's a great lifestyle, but it is a lot of people want to leave as winners. You want to go back with, you know, mortgage-free, or pay for, you know, education back home, or buy a house back home. And you want to leave on the up. You don't want to leave in a pile of debt. And I think, unfortunately, without that kind of intention, that isn't really the case for an awful lot of people. What kind of mistakes are you seeing people make?
I would say a few different ones. I think for me, when working with clients and talking to other people, it's really about the money goals you set. So I think, first of all, their money goals are not specific, which means they don't align with your vision of your ideal life in ten years.
I just want to save more.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be super specific. What are you saving for? Why? What will that give you in life? You know, also your values. What is actually important to you? And I think that's actually a lot with expats. You know, we love our life here, but actually when we look at what we're spending, does that align with our values? Like, for example, you know, if we love family or security, if you look at what you're buying, is that actually contributing to your future life vision or your goals?
I think that's a really interesting point, because we often have this feeling of that should. I should do this. By this point, I should have that. Mm. You know, for what? As you say, if it's not, you know, authentic to who you are and what your family goals are, then what are you actually going to get out of that? I've got to ask about your own kind of personal circumstances, because I'd love to find out how you became a money coach, because you were initially a teacher and you went on, you know, you were saving six figures, you bought two properties, you started an investment portfolio working as a teacher. Why did you decide to have that career shift yourself, Circa?
I had always sort of done things on the side. And then actually, as it turns out, then my school closed. So then I thought, actually, this is the push I need to go. I've always wanted to do it full time. And then I thought, you know, this is a sign. I took it as a positive.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking money now with expat career and money coach and professional CV writer, which Circa, we're going to have to get you on to talk CVs soon. Circa Coyle is with us today, taking my questions and yours. And I'm really curious about, I guess, demystifying the coaching process a little bit. So I don't want to role play because it makes me die inside. But let's imagine a couple come to you. What are some of the common issues that it might be, you know, looking to address? And how do you start to work with an individual or a couple to help them realize their money goals? Can you talk us through it?
Absolutely. So it's really important to have like a sort of discovery call, just to make sure, you know, that people are the right fit for you, because you might be what they're looking for or not. And that's absolutely fine. And also, I've got other people I know who are money coaches who might be a better fit for those people. And that's really important to know, you know, who you want to work with, and also like your zone of genius.
Well, it's got to be a bit of a trust thing. You know, you're incredibly vulnerable if you're saying to someone, you know, here's 3 months of my bank statements, or this is how much I'm earning and this is what debt we have. And, you know, like that's very intimidating, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's so important, again, for them to know you and see. But it should never be. And every coach, anyone I know, it's never punitive. It's an exciting step. You're like, wow, you've made the decision to like, actually, do you know what? It is time. I'm happy to start looking after my finances. Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not happy, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I'm not happy, but you know what? Good for you. You're taking that first step.
Well, we're talking about to-do lists today. And I think that for an awful lot of people, it can be either fear of failure. So fear of looking at those finances and really not liking what you see and feeling like I kind of, your power's taken away from you by the reality of that. Mm. Or it can be, as you say, feeling time like, okay, I'm going to be a grown-up now, and it might be uncomfortable, or it could be incredibly exciting to feel that sense of ownership and opportunity, I suppose.
Absolutely. I know one of the clients I worked with, she said, you know, if I don't do this now, my future self would be so disappointed in me. Mm. So she actually looked at herself, and if she continues how she was, what she was doing, and, you know, she was like, oh my God, I'm going to really suffer in like 5-10 years. So it's that kind of realization. And people have to almost have that realization as well, because it's up essentially like when you're coaching, ultimately you can mentor, facilitate, guide, coach, but it's up to the individual to make that implement the actions themselves.
I think for a lot of money, and it just feels a bit abstract sometimes. You know, you hear a lot more pension chat in other parts of the world for obvious reasons. And I think for me, I'm like, oh, that's a problem for future Helen.
Future Helen would deal with that.
Yeah, future Helen, like she'll be fine. When she gets that enormous inheritance from a distant relative,
she wins the Euromillions.
Yeah, she'll be great. Whereas now, you know, I think it's like, okay, you're 40, you've got 2 kids, no one's coming along to do this for you. It's time to take some steps. So what kind of questions are you asking people about how to establish what their financial goals are?
Well, so that's really, first thing, so important to make sure that they get really clear on their goals. And if it's a couple, they have to be aligned, you know. So really what I do in order, and that's the biggest thing, is the financial goals. Because once you've that, you can then break it down into how much you need to save per, you know, year, per month, per week, per day. You can get excited, you can make a vision board, but you need to be really specific on the goals. So I would do a range of different exercises. The first one would be your future you. So, and I actually go from like quite far, and we work backwards. So it could be like 20 years in the future, 10, and we work to 5, to 1, to 6 months.
So if I want to be living in like an A-frame log cabin by, I don't know, a Canadian lake, for example, just totally off the top of my head there, definitely haven't been thinking about this, it would be a case of, okay, well, let's look at, you know, at cost of living in the country that you might want to retire to, 100%. About, you know, cost of education for children.
Yeah. Because healthcare, I think, what would you be doing? What, you know, do you still want to be in the same job in that time? There's so many factors. And, you know, who's around you? You know, do you want to have an investment portfolio? Would you rather have multiple properties? People like different, you know, different preferences. Do you want to be in the same career? Do you not want to be working? Do you want to be working online from home? So it's really like examining, oh, you know, where do I want to be? And, you know, how do I want to spend even my free time?
Do you find yourself doing marriage counselling as well? They're like, I want to be in a log cabin and he wants to be in Bali. So how are we going to... But compromise. That's an interesting point, actually, because the message here, no name, it's saying, what if one partner wants to do this and the other one doesn't? Really good question.
Well, I think really you have to then do even more exploration and then decide where they can overlap and where there's a difference. Because really, everyone needs to feel excited about the goals, but it also is compromise, because... And also explain maybe why you want that. And, you know, what is the purpose of it? What values is it serving for you? What's the bigger picture? But yeah, being clear on the goals so that it's like a joint effort. Because if someone's not motivated, one person's not motivated, they're not going to make any effort to spend or save, or they're going to be, you know, they're not going to be excited about it.
So. One last question is saying, is there some way I can find out about the best rates on the dirham and the best and safest investments right now? Gold, FDs, property. Thank you. As I said, this isn't what you do specifically, but you do work with people who might be able to advise on that circuit.
Absolutely. So I actually work myself with Mark Zorrell, who Andrew Hallam, expat millionaire. He recommends him. He's in America. He's brilliant. He specializes in expats, but also in UAE, you have Steve Cronin. You also have Simply FI Facebook group. They're amazing.
Get on that.
I've forgotten
group.
Some of their
brilliant.
Names, and they're brilliant. And they're so wonderful. They'll give you all the advice about the best rate and the best.
There you
invest.
Go. Hope that helps. So if anyone who wants to get in touch with you direct, whose question we couldn't get to this afternoon, for example, what's the best way of reaching you?
Absolutely. So if you follow me on Instagram, it's at Circa Coil. I apologise for the spelling. SORCAJCOYLE_EET. Or my website is just www.circacoil.com.
I will send that to anyone who is having issues with pronunciation of name versus spelling of name. Yeah. I'm very happy to send that link over on 4001. Thank you so much, Circa. Really, really interesting. And hopefully got some cogs turning for lots of us this afternoon. Take
Brilliant.
Care
Thank you,
of
Helen.
Yourself.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
There's no denying cost of living right now, and many of us looking for great deals when it comes to hotel stays, restaurants, spa days, pool experiences. And in conversation now with two women who've started their very own platform. It's called Supper Club. But what makes this one different? What's on offer? What are some of the best deals around? We're finding out now from the co-founders, Maureen Omar and Muna Mustafa. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon, guys.
Thank you.
Can I ask you, I always find it really interesting, whether we're talking travel or talking restaurants. Maureen, what's been really popular at the moment? You've got this site that's full of amazing offers for different age groups, different demographics, geography-wise. Where are you seeing kind of real movement? What's popping, as Alex would have said?
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome.
Helen. I think one of the main things that we're looking at the moment is the five-star category. So we have people who actually want to go to places like Jumeirah Al Qasr, which is on Supper Club.
Yeah.
They have a fantastic steak place. So that's something that's we have a lot of people going there. Buffets are still quite popular. JW Marriott is, one of our members' favorite. Again, a few weather's getting better, so we have people going to Habtur Palace as well. So the trend right now is just to go out. People are getting a bit more relaxed with COVID restrictions getting a little easier.
Yeah.
So food and having shining in the sun.
Yeah, some five-star luxury, but not having to pay what you might be dreading to see at the end of the bill. Una, can I ask about how all this got started? What gap did you identify in this market when it came to, as we said, kind of some luxury for less?
Yeah, so the way that it's actually started is Mehreen and I used to work together in a previous company, and in that company, so she was the head of sales and I was managing Abu Dhabi, and I started bringing in the five-star hotels. I remember even one day I met with Jumeirah, and I didn't know who Jumeirah was at that time. And I was like, oh, would Jumeirah be like a cool name to bring on? She's like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, okay. So from there, it was just a trickle effect, and we had all kinds of five-star brands. But the problem was they were all complaining about the same thing, which was the positioning.
Okay.
And at that particular time, in that particular company, we took it to the CEO. We said, okay, five-star brands, amazing, but they need something a bit more niche for them.
That makes sense in terms of that customer perception of things, cheapening, I suppose, whereas this is more of a membership offering.
Exactly.
How does the membership work, Muna? Can you talk us through the kind of categories?
Sure. So we have a few different tiers. We have an annual membership that's 275 dirhams, and then we have a VIP option that's 995. It includes free dinners, and some extras. But as a member, what you get is access to all of the Supper Club promotions, and you can actually book for as many people as you want, and everybody gets the discount in your booking.
That's good for the birthday party celebrations.
Yes, which we get a lot of.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And can I ask, Maureen, a little bit about, well, I guess I'm kind of curious about working together, because you are friends, you're former colleagues. What was it like kind of starting up together? Because, you know, we love supporting small businesses here, and I think it's really important to hear about what does happen behind the scenes, when, especially then COVID hits, you know.
Yeah.
Talk us through it.
So I think when we were working together, 6 months into that, we knew that we would eventually start our own business because the synergy that we had was phenomenal, even if I say so myself. Yeah. We worked very well together. We were breaking records and we knew that. I know it sounds very cliche, but we complemented each other.
No, it doesn't sound cliche at all.
Every relationship has ups and downs, but we work through them. Like, you know, we've known each other for like, what, 8-9 years now?
She's literally the yin to my yang.
Oh. But what advice would you give to yourself, Maureen, looking back? You know, what do you wish someone had told you before embarking upon this? Or if you could whisper in your own ear, you know, 3-4 years ago, what would you say?
So I would say, so before this, we actually had another business. And, you know, for that, we just wanted everything to be perfect. Yeah. But with Supper Club, what we did is we said, you know what, we're not going to wait for that because no product or business is ever perfect. You just keep evolving. So our advice would be just go with it. If you have an idea, if you believe in it, just go with it. And, you know, like Mona always says,
jump off the cliff first.
And then build your plane or parachute on the way down. Yeah,
exactly.
But isn't that quote that I always kind of think about? You should always be embarrassed of your first version. But you've just got to make that start.
Exactly.
A question here from Cherise, saying, "What kind of discounts are we talking?" Good question. All right, come on, Muna. What are some of your like? Oh, that's a good one. I can't wait to show that to people.
Okay, so some of our most booked offers are not a surprise: buy one get one free. But we get it for unlimited people on Supper Club. So places like Shangri-La Breakfast Buffet.
Sofitel JBR Brunch is super popular.
Yeah. Sofitel in Abu Dhabi Dinner Buffet gets a lot of bookings as well.
And then places like Emirates Palace in Abu Dhabi. You know, these are places that are not on other platforms.
Yeah.
So that's the other differentiating factor that Supper Club has. Mm. They're not on other platforms, majority of them. And my super favorite is the fact that it's super discreet. So what that basically means is, you know, if you were to actually go out and eat at a restaurant where you get a discount and nobody knows you're getting a discount, how awesome is that?
You're thinking about that first date situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way Supper Club works is you book online and you just go there and enjoy. Imagine, Helen, you're going for dinner tonight and four of your friends, all you need to do is book on the Supper Club website. You get there and you say, "Hi, I'm Helen. I have a booking with Supper Club." And that's it. And you go, you enjoy. And when the bill is presented to you, the discount is automatically applied.
Rather than a kind of an awkward back and forth with someone who might not be fully up and going.
Exactly.
Got it.
Absolutely.
Muna, where do you see this going? Where would you like to grow Supper Club to?
That's a great question. So we've actually just signed a partnership with MasterCard.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We are so excited about. So over the next 3 years, this is going to be... we're going to be expanding as part of our agreement with MasterCard into Saudi Arabia and then into some other countries, which are
TBC'd.
Yes,
exactly.
It's really lovely to hear a story about you meeting and identifying and growing. And I guess I'm a firm believer the best businesses solve problems for people. And that sounds like what, you know, a big part of what you're doing. A couple of messages going. Can you please say the website? Is it an app? Maureen, could you explain how people can get in touch?
So it's a website, www.supperclub, that's SUPPERCLUB, clubme.com. You can go on the website. We have a birthday month this month, so we have a 50% promotion even for all membership sales. So like, yeah, go enjoy, have fun, tag us and give us your recommendations. Where would you like to eat?
Yeah. Live your best life for less. Guys, thank you so, so much. A real pleasure to meet you both.
Thank you.
Watch this space. I can tell by the looks in your eyes, this is just the beginning. My global domination next. And if you do want that website, by all means, drop me a little line on 4001. I'd be very happy to send it your way.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is your live free legal clinic here on Dubai i103.8. Joining us through the power of the screen, sadly not in the studio today, is Ludmila Yumalova from HPL Yumalova & Pluka. And it feels like a busy old start of the week, Ludmila. Lots of headlines going around, lots of questions and discussion points. And as I said, many people holding on for that 5:30 announcement to see what that is going to mean in that press briefing. How's your week shaping up so far in day one?
I'm very excited to hear the announcement. I was happy to hear about the announcement of another upcoming announcement. So I'm sitting at the edge of my seat waiting, and I can tell you, I may perhaps I'm a little biased, but I'm really hoping that this announcement will have something to do with masks, and in particular masks in school.
Me too. It pains me
to see my kids wearing masks in school. That's just my own personal.
I am manifesting that big time. Big time. So yes, 5:30 press briefing, but keep it on Dubai I-103.8. We'll be bringing you all the latest. The other hot topic of the day, Dubai residents given 2 weeks to register co-occupants. Can you give us a little bit of the info behind the headlines, Ludmilla, on this? And I guess some actionable steps to make sure people are doing what they need to do.
Indeed. So what this is an announcement from the Dubai Land Department. And I have to tell you that the option that we're now all being encouraged to opt into has actually been in existence for quite some time. So this is not a new service. But ultimately, what we're talking about and the reason why this is such a big news is because end of last week, many tenants and owners that have some kind of record with the Dubai Land Department have received an email requesting them to register their co-occupants in the Dubai Land Department app, which is called the REST app. And the email, just so some of the details, the email is fairly short, but it is addressed to owners, developers, property management companies, and tenants. And ultimately, it's a request to register all co-occupants details in in their properties using this Dubai Land Department app. So that's kind of the objective of, I guess, the reason why we're talking about it today. And the objective of this particular announcement is just to try to have records of all the co-occupants in various properties. And it does apply not only just to tenants, but also to owners of properties.
Okay.
Now, to do this is it's done through as I said, the Dubai Land Department REST app. And many have been using the app already. So this will not be any news to them. And those who do not have it activated yet, the best way to activate it is once you download it, is to what's called a UAE pass. And we've talked about the UAE pass in the past, but I will take this opportunity to remind all those who have not activated the UAE pass to do so. Now, the UAE pass can also be activated through your phone. And unlike when it started, where you had to actually go to the kiosk to get the app to your UAE pass verified, you no longer need to go to physical kiosk. You can do it all just through your phone. Now, why this is so fundamentally important is because once you've activated your UAE pass, ultimately this becomes your government login into all sorts of government services in the UAE. And it's extremely convenient. Mm-hmm. For example, if you want to open up your own court access, or if you want to register your ijari or renew a number of other services, your visa and such, UAE pass becomes your central login access. And so I highly recommend everybody who has not done that yet activate it. But now, in connection with this particular announcement, you will need to have your UAE pass activated in order to log into the REST app. Once you've done that, there is a service there on the dashboard to first select whether you have whether it's a unit or a villa. And then there's a service there to pull down for management of co-occupants. And then all you need to do is to add the Emirates ID and date of birth, and then verify each occupant that you're going to register. And now, I know there have been a number of articles and perhaps suggestions as to the purpose of this, and some suggestions have had to do with perhaps, you know, some of the overpopulation or overoccupancy of certain units. But I do think that the main objective is something different. And that is just to ultimately for the government to keep record of what people's addresses. And if you think about it, until recently or until this particular announcement, we don't really, our children, for example, or spouses, mm-hmm. Or domestic employees have not had a record in terms of their official address.
That's right.
So our children, you know, their addresses are not listed anywhere, and nor our domestic help. Now with this particular service, that all that data will be at least theoretically centralized through the Dubai Land Department service. And I know we have yet to see how it will sort of, if there will be a certificate that will be issued for these various co-occupants in the event they wanted a certificate. So, for example, I know that a lot of Europeans, for purposes of their own jurisdictions, need to show where they're registered, where their residential units registered in the UAE. And if they're not on the Jari, they have not been able to produce such documents. So it may be that with this service, this option will become available.
We've got lots of questions on this, saying the new RERA co-occupant directive, do we have to register family, wife and kids? Yes, you do. Yes. My husband did this morning. There's also an option to register cats, dogs and birds, and how many of them. Yes. And also, what about the visitors on a 3-month visit visa for co-occupants? Great question, because as you said, it's about putting in that Emirates ID. What do we know there? Because you do need to register people who are, I believe, are going to be in the UAE for more than 30 days.
So the requirement to register co-occupant is to put in their Emirates ID. So if you don't have a UAE residency, so that kind of answers that question, it does not apply to visitors, at least for the time being. So okay. No, 3 months, I guess, tourists and will not have to register.
Thanks, Ludmilla.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Ludmilla Yamalova joining us now for your free legal clinic. Going to be helping out as many of you as we can between now and 5 o'clock. So do make sure you get any questions in, whether it is wanting clarity on headlines or directive, or indeed getting in touch with a specific situation. And we've had a number of follow-up messages, Ludmilla, really addressing that directive about registering cohabitants from Land Department. What is the name of the app? Steve, we just heard there, Richard Dean's called the REST app. So if you do have anything on that, please do get in touch. Staying with property, Ludmilla, a message here saying, if I'm a co-owner of an apartment in DIFC, if I transfer my share of the ownership to the other co-owner, are land fees charged? I have absolutely no idea. Is this something you know anything about?
I do, and they are charged. And they will be in the DFC session 5% versus the 4% on the mainland through the land department, one. And then two, while on the mainland, I guess again, once again through the land department, there is such a thing as called a gift transfer. And so that's, in other words, if you transfer your share in property to a family member, to a first degree family member, then you don't have to pay the registration fee of 4%. You just pay a gift rate, which is 0.5% or something rather insignificant compared to the 4%. Now, in the DIFC, there is no such thing. So there is no gift in the DIFC. So you have to pay the full 5% even. But what you would have to pay the 5% on is your share in the value of the property, not on the entire value of the property, but in the 50% of the value of the total property. So okay. Yes, you have to pay the registration fee.
Hope that helps. Jan saying, I'm a Dubai resident living in JLT with a friend. I've heard about the new regulations. How long do I have to complete the registration process? And are there penalties if not done in time? Two great questions there, Jan. What insights do we have there, Ludmilla?
Indeed, great questions. So as per the mandate of the Land Department, and again, this mandate has come in the form of an email with a presentation attached. We have 2 weeks. Now, with regards to the penalties, there's nothing in the this mandate, in this communication, that indicates the penalty. And because there hasn't been a circular, for example, that sets out this this particular instruction, because usually penalties are mentioned more in a legal authority of sorts, and that could be done by a decree or circular or the regulation itself. Since here this mandate has come in the form of an email with a presentation, we have yet to see an actual official form of legal authority behind it that ultimately would perhaps set out the penalties for failing to register within the next 2 weeks. So at this point, we don't know what the penalties are, but what we do know is that we expect it to do this within the next 2 weeks. Okay. Now, as you rightfully said, Helen, it's very easy to do. It's as if you have an arrest app, it's just a matter of a few minutes to do. So I guess 2 weeks in the grand scheme of things, given how easy it is to register.
Put it on your to-do
that,
list.
It's not unreasonable. Okay. It's very fast to do. And then I guess once we know more about the penalties, we'll certainly share them if they will become available.
Thanks, Ludmilla.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live on the line from HPL Malava & Pluka is Ludmila Yumalova. It is our resident legal eagle on hand to answer all of your questions and mine as we look behind the headlines, offer some clarity, and most important, hopefully put your minds at ease. Let's go to this anonymous message, Ludmila, saying, is it legal to film a nanny in your home without her permission?
I would say no, because there's a general rule in the UAE that you cannot videotape people without their consent. Now, nannies are no exception. They are human beings like the rest of us. So just because they're domestic workers and they live in your house, it does not mean that you have the authority to film them without their consent, because that would ultimately violate the right to privacy, which is protected under the UAE law. So no filming without consent.
Thank you for that good, concise answer there, and no room for misinterpretation. Please do not do this. Staying with property, Therese is asking, what is the code of conduct when the landlord is arranging viewing of the house that they're selling with a tenant and being messed around with short notice and lateness?
Great question. So there's several concepts. One is there should be an agreement beforehand between the tenant and the landlord to allow landlord to show the property. And many lease agreements may have a reference to that to that right in one shape or another. But from experience, we've seen most of these provisions are fairly broad and subject to interpretation. But in almost all cases, there is either an expressed or at least implied a requirement of notice, and the notice being reasonable notice. So there's that. Now, furthermore, kind of at an overarching level, there is this principle or concept in the tenancy law that tenants are allowed to enjoy the property to the fullest. I mean, this is why they're paying rent. Mm-hmm. So if the landlord continues to schedule visits, even with notice to the tenant, then that starts interfering with their enjoyment of the property, which ultimately breaches the whole purpose or the objective of the contract. So therefore, legally speaking, it is even possible for tenants to argue that, well, while they're living in that property, they don't want to be bothered and show their property to prospective buyers. So there is a legal argument in that, and it's also, depending on how it's structured and whether it's documented in the contract to begin with, it's even a valid and enforceable argument. But I will tell you one thing is that the landlord cannot at all force viewing of the property while the tenants are being in the property, even if there is an agreement to do so. Okay. So the only thing the landlord can do is file a case in rental dispute and then perhaps argue some sort of damages. But ultimately, they cannot force their way into the property, because as long as the tenant is occupying the property, they have full rights to be in the property and have full enjoyment of the property. Furthermore, there's another element to it, and we've seen this quite a bit, is that whenever tenants come or prospective buyers come to visit the property, the tenants, I mean, they want to take photographs of the property, and a lot of tenants are not comfortable with strangers be taking pictures of their property, their possessions, their obviously this is their home. There are perhaps pictures of their family members around the house, and so on and so forth. So there's also an argument to breach of privacy. Mm-hmm. And a similar argument is with regards to, obviously, on the heels of COVID, is that, do you want strangers to be coming into your property and viewing the property, especially if it happens frequently, especially if you have either elderly parents or children or other family members with some sort of underlying medical conditions. Mm-hmm. So in short, there are many arguments in favor of tenants to restrict viewings altogether, but at least to request that they are done with plenty of notice and on limited conditions in terms of how many people can come to view the property, how long they can stay in the property, and whether or not they can take photographs.
I think that's fair as a tenant to say this time to this time on these days is absolutely fine, and make sure they are on time. Otherwise, we will be closing the door and that window of opportunity will be closed. A follow-up question relating to filming. Lorraine saying, are you allowed to have cameras at work in a warehouse?
Yeah, so interestingly, to do it the right way, the company should have a document mm-hmm. that either is part of their HR manual or as part of the offer letter or even employment agreement that clearly indicates that there are cameras on site and that employees understand that they are being filmed or surveilled by these cameras. and that they consent to it. So once they do that, that's fair game because ultimately they consented. So there's that's to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. The other way, obviously, because even if you haven't been asked to sign a document like this or haven't been presented with a document like that, if these cameras are in plain view, then there's also an implicit, at least theoretically, an implicit acknowledgement or agreement that you know that there are cameras and that you are being photographed. So if you don't object to it, then there is definitely a legitimate argument to that you have implicitly agreed to it. Now, just because you're being filmed doesn't mean that the footage can be used willy-nilly, however the company wants to do it. So it can only, that the right to privacy remains the same, and that is that that footage can only be used for legitimate purposes, and ultimately if there is some kind of a misdemeanor or some kind of an offense that happens, and only with the authorities. So it cannot, just because you have consented to being filmed, it does not mean that the company has the right to go and share that footage and photographs to whoever it wants.
Thanks, Ludmilla. Let's go to, I'm going to try and squeeze in three questions. Okay, are you ready? DK is saying, our AC bills have been between 1,000 and 1,300 dirhams for the last 3 months. We're living in a two-bedroom apartment. Contact the AC supplier company to see why they were so high, and they suggest there might be a fault within the building and to contact building management. Other people there are also facing high bills, but building management are refusing to identify the issue or look into it properly, simply saying the bills are high because it's summer and there are no faults. But it is still very high considering the AC units are not on all the time. What can we do about this when the AC supplier are adamant there's an issue within the building? Who can we speak to? Whose responsibility is this?
And unfortunately, that's a common problem in the many communities. And I would say in this particular case, especially if the AC company has acknowledged that there must be a defect in the system, then the responsibility has to be with the building management. And so in that case, you can file a complaint against the building management. Now, where you file the complaint and who should file is a different, it's a more complicated question, because ultimately you can start with the land department or RERA. And they can perhaps use their influence to convince the building management company to inspect the system. And if that fails, then ultimately at least the association, depending on how it's structured, may be able to file a complaint with the rental court at RERA, which is the right jurisdiction for all commonly owned property disputes.
Okay, thank you for that, and wishing you all the very best there, DK. No name on this message, saying, what is the law guidance on children's custody after 11 years old? For now, they're with me, the mother. Thank you.
So it depends on the underlying religion. So if the family is not Muslim, then it's whatever the laws of their own countries would mandate. In this particular case, I guess sort of the fair assumption is that the custody, this is for non-Muslims, the custody and guardianship is one and the same, and that usually it's shared 50-50 between the parents. Now, to what extent and who has which visitation rights, it's really just between the parents to decide. And if they fail to do so, then it's for the court, and the court would apply the jurisdiction and the laws and precedents of that country of which the law would apply to this particular family. That's for non-Muslims. For Muslims, so therefore, just I'm assuming that the reason the listener is asking this question is because they assume that Sharia law or Sharia principles would apply to them equally, but they only really, by law and logically, apply only to Muslim families. So just because you live in the UAE and if you're not a Muslim family, does not mean that the same custody and guardianship rights would apply to you. Now, under Sharia, it depends on whether there's girls and boys, and depends on how many children there are. So usually guardianship stays with the father, custody, and that is the physical possession of the children with the mother. And I think for girls is until the age of 13, for boys until the age of 11, about so something around that line. However, the courts do look at the overall family dynamic. And often they do not like to necessarily separate the children. We've seen many cases where the courts decide that the custody should continue to stay with the mother irrespective of the age of the children, just in order to keep the children together. That's one factor. The other factor is just the overall dynamic between the parents. So just because the parents are divorced does not mean that custody does not automatically transfer. So you need to have ultimately a court's mandate to decide one way or the other. So a lot of parents decide that for a guardianship to continue to stay with the father, but the children continue to live with the mother. So it's really up to the parents, mm-hmm. unless they have a dispute. In that case, it'll be up to the court.
Ludmila, thank you so, so much. Managed to get through an awful lot in today's show. There are a couple of questions that we weren't able to answer today, so I will put them into the show for next week. I did try and prioritise ones that sounded a bit more timely and urgent, especially those relating to that latest directive regarding the Land Department. But Ludmila, if anyone does want to contact you, follow you across social media and reach you at HPL and Malvin Pluka, but what's the best way of getting in touch?
Just look us up on our website. It's www.lylawyers.com. Lylawyers.com.
Thank you so, so much. Hopefully have you in the studio next week. And I'll see you on Instagram in the meantime. Ludmila Maliva, don't forget we do have that free legal clinic for you every single Monday afternoon. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.